Welcome to the Climate Hour. I'm Bob Grove, your host. Tonight, we're going to talk about the United States annual Earth Day and Kansas City's history of Earth festivals. We're joined by some of the people behind the upcoming 2021 Earth Festival. Stan Slaughter with Missouri Organic Recycling. Hi, Stan.
Hey, Bob.
Eileen Bobowski's with the Sewing Labs. Hi, Eileen. Leslie Scott is with Reuseful. Hi, Leslie.
Hi there.
David Haken with Carbon Footprint Eating. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
James Owens with Renew Missouri. Hi, James.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
And Julia Othram, piano playing songwriter, singer, and I understand the composer of Frickin' Awesome.
Frickin' Awesome! It's hey, so Julia. Wonderful to be here. Thank you for having all of us.
Thank you. So about Earth Day. Earth Day began in 1969 when U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson proposed the idea of holding a nationwide environmental teach-in. You know, a year later, on April 22nd, more than 20 million people took to the streets, and this first Earth Day still remains the largest single-day protest in human history. That's kind of impressive when you think about it. Earth Day events are now celebrated in 141 countries, and over 100 million people observed last year's 50th anniversary of Earth Day. Kansas City has a long tradition of annual Earth Day festivals. The Climate Council of Greater Kansas City has produced Kansas City's Earth Festival in recent years, the most recent two festivals being online due to the COVID pandemic. But the tradition goes back many years with different groups organizing different events. Stan, you know, you're with Missouri Organic Recycling now, but I know you've organized Earth Day events for Kansas City in the past. When were those events and what were they like?
We started with the Heartland All Species Project in 1987 and doing costumed animal parades, walking a mile in your favorite critter shoes. And these were amazing, riotous things. We had in 1990, we had over 3,000 people in a costumed parade through the Country Club Plaza. And we felt like we rattled the status quo with those critters in the right places. But what we were famous for in Kansas City were the recycled sculptures. The first one was in 1989, called the Phantom Forest. We realized we needed 3,000 trees to make the Sunday newspaper in Kansas City. And we were wrong. It was 6,000. But we built a cemetery, a big Christmas tree shaped thing of stacks of newspaper. We collected 150,000 pounds of newspaper and sold it for insulation and bought land in the cloud forest of Costa Rica. In 1990, we had the big Earth, 150-foot diameter circle with colored recyclables. That tradition continued until 94, and we handed it off to Bridging the Gap, which did a great job for several years too.
That's exciting. So you're building these big flat sculptures and then looking at them
flying
from
over, yeah. No drones at the
and
time.
And this was before drones, exactly. So you actually had to have a helicopter or something.
We had a news helicopter and a couple of small planes and almost lost a photographer. It was pretty crazy. There were no rules at the time. We were doing things. This was all on the south side of the Nelson in Thies Plaza. And
And this was all just to raise awareness of environmental issues.
Absolutely. But there were many, many groups, basically, you know, the showcase for all the environmental groups in the region. Mm-hmm. And we had 15,000 people in Kansas City over 3 days.
That's really great.
Earth Day 90.
Yeah, that's amazing. This year's Earth Festival, which is sponsored by KKFI, runs April 17th and 18th. We're calling the festival EF21 Online, which is short for Earth Festival 2021. EF21 Online opens with a climate speakers forum, and we're going to be keynoted this year by the 2020 United Nations Youth Leader, A.Y. Young, and the Green Party's 2020 U.S. presidential candidate, Howie Hawkins. So we're looking forward to that. The opening forum is followed by 2 days of Climate University events. The Climate University is a series of one-hour online climate actions that cover a wide range of issues, from fast fashion to zero waste to renewable energy to the environmental impacts of food and plastics and a lot more. I think most of our guests here today are part of the Climate University. Eileen, your group helps address environmental issues of fast fashion, and we might explain what fast fashion is. you're presenting a workshop called Sustainability. That's S-E-W as a needle of thread, Sustainability. Can you tell us about your event and about fast fashion?
Yeah, absolutely. Fast fashion really has a lot to do with consumerism really taking over. We really need to do everything we can to reduce consumerism. I kind of look at sustainability as a journey. You know, there's so much to be learned from the Rana Plaza garment factory disaster, and we're always looking for ways to slow fashion down here at the Sewing Labs. The Sewing Lab simply teaches sewing towards employment and entrepreneurship and enrichment, but we were actually founded with the concept of how can we keep all the fabric that is around out of landfills? How can we bring back that legacy of sewing that people just, that's how people survived for so long, and reduce that fast fashion that's around? You know, you have all these big box stores that have these $5 t-shirts that people are selling, and we've got to figure out ways to reduce that consumerism because of what goes into manufacturing those $5 t-shirts. They last you for 6 months and then people are throwing them away. I learned recently, was looking at a study that was done over in England, where 60% of people, I believe it is, did not know how to sew on a button. And they would rather pitch an item of clothing rather than learn how to sew on a button. And a button is probably the easiest thing to sew. That's what we're doing here at the Sewing Labs, and trying to teach people to reuse and upcycle clothing. Everything I buy is from a thrift store. And if I want to make it look even cooler, there's amazing accoutrements I could add to my outfits because I know how to sew. And so that's what we're all about. Stan.
Yes, I just saw something. I was in Drawdown related. I may have been an actual Drawdown release about the incredible amount of energy synthetic fabrics take to make. It's a huge part of the real total that I was just aghast about. The nylon and the synthetic fabrics are just
when you think about the leisure suits of the 70s and all that polyester, just that's what they're finding with the microparticles. A lot of that comes from the polyester fabrics that exist. We're huge proponents of 100% cotton and organic fabrics, if you can use those.
I actually did a KKFI. We did a broadcast on fast fashion a few weeks ago. And Stan, like you, I was amazed at the energy. And those were given in millijoules, megajoules, millions of joules of energy. And the table is something like, if I remember this correctly, it's like 36 megajoules to produce a kilogram of steel. You know, that's the steel that we build our skyscrapers with. So 36 megajoules, but it took 126 megajoules to create 1 kilogram of polyester. Can you imagine that? 10 times the amount of energy to make polyester than it does steel. And, you know, you get into your rayon and your nylons and things like that, and you're up in the 200, 250, 260 megajoules to produce just a kilogram of that stuff. Yep. And, you know, comparing that steel, take a natural fiber like, what was that? Hemp is very good.
Hemp is very low.
Flax, linen. Linen is like 10 megajoules. So you compare a linen shirt, 10 megajoules per kilogram of fabric, or a polyester shirt, 126 megajoules.
So we have a statistic that it takes 700 gallons of water to make a new cotton t-shirt. So that's from the water side of things.
And there's a big difference between normal cotton and organic cotton. If you're doing the normal cotton, because there's so many fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides that have to go on those plants, that really increases the carbon footprint, because every time that tractor goes over the field, we're getting some really loud noise, Eileen. Every time we go over the field, that's really raising that carbon footprint. So fabric choice makes a lot of sense. You know, when we're talking polyesters, and this is the fast fashion, I mean, the polyester drove the fast fashion industry, and, you know, polyester in the landfill is going to be there a couple hundred years. So every time you buy that $10 shirt, wear it a couple times, and then it falls apart because it's, you know, cheaply made, throw it in the landfill. It's going to be there well after you're dead. So Eileen, can you tell us about your workshop, Sustainability? What's that going to be like?
Yeah, just talking about things that we can do. The way I look at it is it's all about things that we as individuals can do to make a difference, like shopping thrift, like upcycling, and the different workshops that are available out there. Here at the Sewing Labs, we actually just did an unpaper towel workshop. You can actually take terry cloth and cotton and put some snaps on it and create a roll of paper towels to reuse and clean up your kitchen. And we did a workshop yesterday where somebody upcycled a gentleman's shirt into several items, aprons and things like that. There's just so much that you can do to help reduce that fast fashion and upcycle. We'll be talking about, you know, important new websites like Depop, where people are actually selling these items and trying to keep this out of the landfills. You know, so many of the thrift stores that are around, if they have an overabundance, they send so much of their materials overseas. And then the people overseas, they don't know what to do about it. I read a really great story about an organization overseas that is shredding fabric now, and they're turning that shredded fabric into insulation for buildings. Genius. There's just so much more that can be done. It's estimated that 5% of total global emissions come from the fashion industry. Fashion is the number two polluter in our world, and there's so much that we can do to make a difference. So that's what we'll be talking about.
That's really great. And you're right. Fashion is so important. And you know, I refer people back to our podcast. If you look at a previous Climate Hour episode on fast fashion, you'll learn a lot about this. It's a really important topic. I was shocked not only by the megajoules that are being used, the energy that goes into that, but we also talked about the human rights issues. You know, so much of this cheap fabric being made in unsafe third world countries. And locally too. I mean, the U.S. isn't exempt from abusing our workers. So there's a lot of good content to that program. Looking forward to your workshop, your Climate University workshop, Eileen, because I think this is really an important topic.
Thank you so much.
When is your workshop? Absolutely.
It's at 3:00 on the 17th.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, Eileen's talking about obviously, you know, sewing, mending, but she also mentioned upscaling and reusing. I mean, those are important in the fashion industry, and I also think they're important in other ways. Leslie, your workshop is called Tech. It Does a Planet Good. That's a really interesting title. How does tech help us reduce waste and make things, well, reuseful, which is the name of your group?
It is. So, you know, I think we think about technology as, you know, having a lot of bad uses, more so than anything. It seems like that's what the attention is getting right now. And you can really do tech for good. So we have a website called Reusable, reusefull.org. And that site, we're actually very proud to have the Sewing Labs as one of our charity partners. It helps people who have excess items at home that they're looking to find a good place for, find organizations that can actually put it to use. So, you know, if you have those t-shirts that, you know, maybe are actually still good, and you aren't sewing inclined, or you haven't heard of the Sewing Labs quite yet, and you think, gosh, I just really am tired of tripping over this bag. I think we all have boxes and bags of our kids' toys they've grown out of, or clothing. My mother, once she hit middle age, she would talk about how her closet was shrinking her clothes. I think a lot of our pandemic closets have been shrinking our clothes, and people are needing to possibly clean out their drawers and closets because things no longer fit. It could be furniture, or, you know, maybe you're downsizing, or you have an aging parent who is going into assisted living, and you're looking for a way to, you know, do some good with that situation. you can go to reusable.org and select what you have. And we have organizations that have indicated what they accept. And you'll get a list of organizations that match your search criteria. And then we say, we're like Tinder, but we don't make the dinner date for you. So at that point, it's up to you to contact the organization and find out what their current needs are. Make sure they didn't just get a big pallet of t-shirts, and then make sure that you arrange for that donation directly with the organization. It's really important for people to be assessing the quality of what they're giving to, and ensuring that, you know, would I be okay giving this to a good friend or a family member? Because, sometimes nonprofits can be dumping grounds for things we no longer want. Those things could be stained or torn or broken. And, the people who nonprofits serve deserve as much dignity as everyone else. And so it's really important that we, be scrutinizing those items we have to give and making sure that, they're of high quality. And the reason I wanted to do this workshop was because I had this idea 10 years ago or better. And, I was a technical writer for about 8.5 years. I've been in some IT shops, but frankly, I had no idea, what to do, how to do it from the technical side of things. And I was really fortunate enough to be connected with Code for KC. And Code for KC is a code brigade of an organization called Code for America. They're in the San Francisco area. And we have these brigades all over the country, which are groups of tech and non-tech folks like me who come together to do these projects for good. So we hack for good. And so this workshop really is going to be about looking at some of the projects that are environmentally related and giving more detail about my project and then another Code for KC environmentally related project that the Metropolitan Energy Center has with Code for KC as well. And just helping the attendees understand, how to engage with Code for KC, how to present, a potential project that they may have in mind, and just learn more about that resource. And so we're really excited to be engaging with the EF21 attendees on that topic.
Sounds like a great workshop. I like the whole concept of tech for good. So I'm looking forward to that. And you mentioned something about being kind to our nonprofits. I mean, some of the stats I've seen where, all the things we donate thinking that we're doing good, we're recycling, yet 98% of all the things we donate end up in a landfill anyway, because they can't be sold. I mean, a nonprofit's there to receive these things and find a new home. But so much of what we donate or try to recycle is simply, not donatable, or, nobody's going to buy it. So it ends up in a landfill anyway.
Well, I mean, and that might be true as it relates to, donating to a thrift store that might get just inundated and they only have so much space. But when you're using a tool like Reusable, what you'll find is organizations that will put your donations to direct use with the clients they serve. And so, you may have, an organization that is serving people experiencing homelessness. And so, they are going to need, clothes, or you may have an organization serving, a survivor of domestic violence who left in the middle of the night with only the clothes on their back. So there are opportunities to make sure that your items are going to actually go to someone who is in need and not end up in a landfill. And that's really, a lot of what we're trying to do with our platform.
Well, I think that's what's unique about your platform is it's not just a shotgun. You're actually qualifying the donations and finding a home for them instead of just, dumping them at the door of the thrift. Are there other groups around the country doing what you're doing, or is this unique?
It's fairly unique. I haven't found a lot of sites that are like this. There are some that, will focus on volunteering, cash donations. The site tries to focus on the three ways to give to an organization: time, talent, and treasure. So we also allow people to post their organizations will post their links to donate cash and also volunteer. Somebody may find an organization that maybe it's not a good fit for the items they have, but they're really inspired by their mission and decide to reach out and sign up to volunteer. So, with us doing those three opportunities to give, as well as, give them space for their Amazon wish list, which I know is not super climate friendly, but when it comes to a way to provide new items, which can be especially important right now to help with, cleaning supplies and things like that, their budgets have really increased. There's those opportunities as well. So as far as something that's doing all those, serving all those purposes, I'm not aware of one.
That's really great what you're doing here. And, being successful here, I think that becomes a role model for other cities, other areas that want to expand into this kind of program.
We certainly hope to expand soon. So if there's anybody listening who's a champion in their metro, even close by, Lawrence or Topeka, we'd love to talk.
Very good. So Tech It Does a Planet Good. When is your workshop?
Is April 17th at 4 p.m. And I just wanted to do one quick clarification and say our site is free for everyone to use.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Leslie. So James, Renew Missouri, you're focused on renewable energy options. When we think about the environment, renewable energy is kind of like a major item. Your event's titled Renewable Energy Programs and Incentives. That sounds like a really useful workshop for anybody wanting to plug into renewables. Can you tell us more about your workshop and Renew Missouri?
Sure. Yeah. Just a quick note about Renew Missouri. We are a 501c3 based out of Columbia, but we do have offices in Kansas City. So we do have a full-time staff member in Kansas City. He will be moving back to Columbia. So if anyone knows someone looking to looking for a position, let me know. A
little job application here.
Yeah. Might as well throw that out there. We mainly work on renewable energy and energy efficiency opportunities and policy in Missouri. We're doing a little bit of work in Kansas as well these days, but our focus is, working in front of regulators in Jefferson City that oversee how, companies like Evergy are ran, where they get their energy made, how they transmit it to your home, some of the technology that can make it more efficient to be distributed to your home or business. We work on all of those filings. We appear before those bodies. We work with Independence Power and Light, which is a municipal utility. And we're always working with member owners of rural electric cooperatives. So if you're like, say, Platte Clay Rural Electric Cooperative, we're always looking for people who can run for those positions and have an impact that way on the decisions of those utilities. When we talk about incentives and opportunities for renewables, I think it's really important for us to remind folks that you do have a little more power and control over how you get your energy than I think it seems. Whenever you walk into a room, flip on a light switch, it comes on or it doesn't. And so that's, the main concern that you have. But, when you look at Evergy service territory, you look at the fact that, let's say, they are in the process of trying to get people to subscribe to a program where, you do have to pay a little extra every month, but you can get all of your power exclusively from solar. They're very close to getting that fully subscribed. When it's fully subscribed, they'll be building a 5-megawatt solar facility near Kansas City. It's a good first step to seeing them move a lot of their power source to solar. So that's something that you can go to Evergy's website and learn a little bit about. But more importantly, you know, one of the things that we're most proud of is the extensive amount of money that Evergy has invested into energy efficiency. Free products and programs, rebates for things to put in your apartment, your home, thermostats, insulation, new equipment, new appliances, all of these things that can help manage how much power you use. Because, you know, ultimately, whether you're, you know, no matter where you're getting your power source from, it makes the most sense to try to reduce the amount of power you have to use. And right now, Missouri has, at least on the Missouri side, has very good laws allowing utilities to invest in that. Kansas has the same laws, but they've run into some regulatory problems over there. So we don't see as many benefits to, on the Kansas side, but we do see a lot of opportunity for you to weatherize your home, update your home, and to do that in a really cost-effective way that not only saves on the amount of energy you use, but also on how much you spend every month. So that's really important. And that's, I think, what we want to talk about at our session.
Are you finding that these renewable options, I mean, you say it costs a little bit more for Evergy's solar tariff, mm-hmm. but are you finding renewable energy is moving closer to par with traditional fossil fuel? What about the big plants and things like that?
Oh, I think right now you look at solar and wind, it is cheaper to produce that as opposed to power that comes from a coal source or natural gas. It's just that Evergy is trying to take advantage of your altruism by saying like, well, we want to build all this solar and we think solar is important, but we want to make sure a certain amount of people are subscribed to this and we want them to pay a little extra that justifies us building this. The reality is, if you look at the true cost of producing power, which is to say you've got to factor in how much it costs to operate and maintain a facility like a coal plant, it is so much cheaper to produce solar and wind as opposed to using traditional forms of fossil fuel. That's where we are right now as a country.
So it actually is cheaper. It's just, you know, people wanting to protect their existing infrastructure and move slowly on these things.
Yeah. We have a lot of coal plants that are still needing to be retired. We're working with the utility companies. We're working with a lot of groups to try to get those plants to be shut down early because I think that they are proving to be costly for the utility company to continue managing them. But they also have a lot of debt and depreciation in those plants. And so we're trying to help make that less of a liability for them. We're pursuing legislation on that in Jefferson City and in Topeka right now. But in the meantime, you know, they're trying to build up this solar and trying to, you know, sell it at a premium.
James, is there a name for that kind of legislation that ameliorates the cost of that? What's the title?
The concept is called securitization. It basically allows the utilities to convert the debt and the depreciation in those plants to convert them into a bond or security and sell those on the market. That way that it's a cost neutral approach to shutting those down. There are similar bills in Kansas and Missouri. This is, I think, adopted in about 24 other states, Missouri and Kansas. I don't know if we're going to get over the finish line this year, but we're very close. And I think, you know, if you want to follow it, like let's say in Missouri, Senate Bill 202 is the bill that I think is probably going to be the one that gets, the closest to the governor's desk.
So your workshop, I mean, incentives, rebates, whatever, that primarily focused at the homeowner, or is it also valuable to business owners?
Yeah, a lot of what we've just talked about with energy efficiency and the community solar program that Evergy is offering is for small businesses as well as residential customers. There are opportunities for larger businesses. There are programs out there where, like, let's say you're a small factory. You want to get all of your power from renewables. You have what's called a green tariff. a tariff, which is basically what we call the underlying legal document that makes up your bill. That would allow you to buy wind power directly from the utility. We don't do that for solar right now. There's not enough solar in Evergy's service territory to justify that, but there's a lot of wind. And if you are a larger business, that's an opportunity. They also will work directly with the people that you know, help you with your operations to kind of control your demand, control like when, I mean, they offer special opportunities for energy efficiency, demand side programs. So if you are a larger business, there are opportunities there as well.
That's great. So renewable energy programs and incentives, when is your event?
I believe that event is that on the 18th at, boy, oh boy. I think that's, you got me.
Off guard here.
3 o'clock. On the 18th.
3 o'clock. There you go. 3 o'clock on the 18th. Renewable energy and programs and incentives. Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Stan, let's look at yours. I mean, Missouri Organic Recycling, you're presenting a workshop called Composting Food Waste, Trying to Stop It. You see, that's an interesting title. We know you compost. Missouri Organic composts lots of food waste, but it sounds like you're wanting to get out of that.
Well, we'll have to stay in that business for a long time because we're still under just a little bit over 5% of the metro's food waste. And unlike a polyester suit that lays there for 200 years, when we bury food waste, we're burying a bomb. We're burying a nasty surprise for our children. That food waste is going to be rotting for 30 to 50 years. And it's 20 to 30 times worse than carbon dioxide producing methane. So we'd like to stop it at the source, you know, stop the generation of food waste in every way we can. We know we're not going to succeed. So we're our business is set in that regard, you know. So it's exciting to talk about all the ways we can minimize food waste. And one of them is that we're doing a lot of programs. This is the composting poster. This is the worm composting poster. And we have a grant in the state of Kansas right now that's serving 50 schools, buying them $200 worth of equipment to build compost bins that are buy worm bins and microscopes to study the worms. We're doing a very interesting program of YouTube videos. It's on Missouri Organic's YouTube channel. Just you can find those free videos to watch there. So we'd like to get ourselves completely out of the business, but it's a little disingenuous because we know that's not going to happen right away for many years, in fact. But, you know, 50% of it's generated residentially. And although Kansas City's ahead of almost every Midwestern town you can think of, not necessarily the East and the West Coast, but we do have curbside pickup. We do have curbside 5-gallon bucket drop-off. We have residential services for food waste. We're going to talk about that aspect of it. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of things. Compost is a beautiful thing because it's tied to so many other aspects of it. And Missouri Organic is in the waste business. We're, you know, think about Missouri, Kansas City is a tree city. You would be absolutely amazed at how much tree waste there is and what all the trees that come in, the tree trimmers, the Parks Department, all of that comes to us, all the leaves and brown paper bags. So we are taking nature's detritus, revamping it, and sending it back. So we're kind of the dirty bottom half of the cycle. You might say that's a bad thing to say, but it's somebody's got to be there doing it. And it's an important job because without the death and reuse, we don't have any new life. We don't have any new growth. And we can't let these things be tied up in the landfill, in the backyards, back dead end streets and all that stuff. We need to continue to move that through. So I was just made a little note as you suggested I talk about my workshop. First of all, it is the landfill. And we mentioned that it's a gigantic amount that's being buried in Kansas City. We think it's 1 million pounds a day generated. Uh-huh. And we're getting 60 tons a week. So you might say 9 to 10 tons a day. in collection. We collect from 320 sources from Lawrence to Warrensburg to St. Joseph. And we have Kroger and Dillon's that bring us their stuff. So we have Boulevard brings us 1,200 gallons of beer a week. But it's the yeasty dregs, unfortunately. But all kinds of liquid waste. So we're reducing that. The volume is intense. It lets us build a very interesting compost. Everybody else takes squash and the food waste and the plastic because they don't have a machine to separate it. And they put it all in the windrow and cook it for 6 weeks at 150 degrees. And that plastic inside the landfill, inside the windrow, can't help but leach. And so we made a decision several years ago to depackage all of the food waste, reject all the plastic and cardboard, and get down to a liquid food slurry and mix that in. So the way we do our composting is unique in the United States. There's 10 companies that have depackagers like ours, but we're the only one who does what we do. And so that's the way we handle it is an interesting story. And we'll be showing some videos in the workshop about how that goes. And of course, then there's the compost. See, this dual-sided business, you know, we make the compost and we did good things in making compost. And now we've sent the compost out to do good things in the world because it's going to increase plant growth. It's going to increase carbon sequestration and drawdown. And it's going to make healthier food because compost is a composite of everything that died. So all the Legos that built all the plants and all the food waste and flowers and stems and roots that we ate or didn't eat comes to us. And then that means that our compost is full of all the trace minerals and all the vital substances that it takes to make the soil work well. So we're going to put vitality in the soil, in the food, and in the people. We hope so. And we'd like to see that part of it going through.
When you say trying to stop, I mean, obviously your business is secured. I mean, you're taking right. in such a massive volume and doing such good things with it. The workshop is kind of telling people how to kind of reduce their own food waste. I mean, just this creating so much waste.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a food digester that you simply put the food in a container, but below grade, and it melts into the soil and feeds your garden. It never comes back. But there's several tricks we'll talk about on-site food waste handling. First of all, reduction proper use, yes. proper storage, proper preparation. You know, the shelf that's labeled "Eat Me First" in your refrigerator. You know, just that consciousness will definitely be covering that too. So, yeah, thank you for that question.
Stan, I just wanted to say I'm sure. super excited about your workshop because I live alone and I try and eat healthy and sometimes it's hard to get through a whole bag of spinach or, you know, I just have the best of intentions and the guilt from that food waste is just awful. And so I've been doing curbside compost collection for about 6 months now. And hey. I love it. I love being able to just dump it in the bucket and put the lid on and forget about it. And, you know, still do my best, of course, but it really is quite a relief. But all that being said, I'm excited about your tips for keeping it out of the bucket.
Right. Well, we got a shout out to compostcollectivekc.org, the Compost Collective, and to all the citizens in Kansas City who believe that this is a great thing, because I believe they have 3,000 customers now in both sides of the state line, and they've never had a down week, you know, and so this is just, and we're thrilled about that kind of opportunity for people who care, but all those people who care.
That's great. So when is your event?
It's Saturday at 3, the 17th.
Very good. I believe you're also going to play some of your music at the after party. Is that right?
That's correct. I'll be definitely singing Feed It to the Worms and Why Don't You Put Me in the Compost Pile.
I'll look forward to that. The after party, for those of you who don't know, is an open mic, or in this case, an open camera party that closes the festival on Sunday evening. So everybody's invited to that. David, moving on to talking about composting, but talking about reducing food waste, there's a lot of things there. The name of your group and the title of your event is the same, Carbon Footprint Eating. Tell us about your event and, you know, how those go together.
Well, most people are starting to, especially if they care about the climate crisis, are really starting to learn that the standard American meat-based diet is not good for the planet. And we still have a long way to go to have people go to a plant-based diet. And when Project Drawdown looked at the impact of all the different climate solutions, a plant-based diet ended up in the top 10. So the workshop is going to be talking about the carbonfootprinteating.org site that has helped so far 60 people in the last few months take the challenge to go meatless for Mother Earth and to do that for a month. And there's a whole lot of tips on how to reduce your carbon footprint by what you eat and what you buy. But I wanted to talk today a little bit about how I got started on this crazy project, because I was traveling as a musician in 2019 and becoming aware of the need for a plant-based diet. I just started seeing if I could travel and be on the highway and in hotels and motels and conferences and still not eat meat. And as I figured out how to do that, I kept talking to people that were concerned about the climate but could not see a pathway to change from eating meat. And early 2020, I began to get serious about combining plant protein. And after a month or two of that, I was so surprised at how much better I felt. At that same time, I read a book by Kate Geegan called Go Green, Get Lean, which was very crafty because it did very well as a diet book. But she basically laid out all of the carbon impact of the food we eat, and not just reducing meat to a more plant-based diet, but looking at how much packaging goes into it and processing and whether it's coming from across the planet. And so in 2020, I realized people were doing a lot more cooking at home because they were stuck and they had more time. They were baking. And putting together this website to help people make that transition could be done with a team all online without meeting in person. So I got a team together and we came up with four pathways. So wherever somebody was in their journey toward a plant-based diet, they would have some help. So of course, the first pathway was a vegan. And most people use the number 70% reduction if from a meat-based diet going vegan. And the next pathway was vegetarian, which most numbers I've seen is about 63%. So it's still really hefty. And really talk to people about how we now know that cheese has the biggest carbon footprint as beef. So as someone on the vegetarian pathway, it's really encouraged if they use dairy not to use cheese. And really look at whether they want to have dairy and eggs, or whether they want to use the challenge to go egg-free for a month or dairy-free for a month. And the next pathway was flexitarian. And I was definitely a flexitarian for a while. And the beauty of this is that someone, let's say they're taking the challenge and they're doing a really good job eating vegetarian for 25 days. And the call comes out that friends and family are getting together for barbecue. You know, if they've been doing this a long time, you know, they might have that conversation with people. But if they're just starting out on the flexitarian pathway, they can say, sure, go eat barbecue. And then the next day go back to a vegetarian diet for another 5 days and still get not only the health benefit from going 30 days on a vegetarian diet, but also reduce their carbon footprint for that month by 17%. And probably save money at the same time. You know, people are like going, oh, I wish I could put solar panels on, but it's so expensive. I wish I could get an electric car, but it'll take me 5 years to save up for it. I mean, this is something people have complete control over and can do right now. So the whole idea for this website and the support is, what would entice meat eaters who care about the climate crisis to try eating less meat? And, you know, it's always good to have something new, right? It's like, oh, I tried that once and I woke up in the middle of the night hungry and all. And so I put a whole section on protein power and talked about combining the different plant proteins, talking about the foods that provide the protein that can be just as good a quality and as dense as meat. Your body will not know the difference. You have all your essential amino acids for that meal provided. And this is combining the whole grains, legumes, and the seeds. And so I came up with some really fabulous dishes that just change a little bit. And I was so surprised at how much usable protein there was. And so that's kind of the new feature. Well, I'm trying something new. You know, you have to help people because a change from a regular meat diet to vegetarian is a social change for people. And there's so much peer pressure, social pressure. You know, what restaurant do they meet at? You know, it's got to be something that, you know, vegetarians and meat eaters can both order something. So it's a really big deal for a lot of people. And
so your workshop's going to have recipes?
Yeah, we've got recipes, and we've got some sites that are great for getting recipes, and other cooking tips. I had no idea until I started talking to our team how much I know about cooking tips that was pretty much common knowledge in the 70s that somehow has gotten lost. And so now I'm this, you know, cooking expert all of a sudden. And things that really make people's life a lot easier, dealing with, you know, cooking from scratch instead of takeout and ordering pizza. So it has been a really fun journey, and it has really been exciting to see people that I talked to. So many people say, I've really been thinking about this, but I haven't figured out how to get started on it, and are successful doing the challenge.
So when is your workshop?
It is Saturday the 17th at 5 p.m.
That sounds like a really great one. You mentioned you travel as a musician. Are you also going to be playing at the after party?
Yes, I will.
Ah, we can look forward to that. Thank you, David. So all these great workshops, Climate University, and these are all free to the public. So I hope people will join us, these people and more. And on Saturday evening, something a little different. EF21 is presenting a film and music event produced by Cinema KC in collaboration with the Kansas International Film Festival and musician Julia Othmer. Julia, can you tell us about that? And, you know, tell us about you and your music.
Absolutely. And first of all, I want to say thank you for having all of us, and all of the work that all of you are doing is so inspiring. I feel like our project called Seven, which is being presented, as you said, a part of Heart and Soil Cinema Casey's presentation on Saturday night, is very much a celebration of Mother Earth, which is what all of you and who all of you are working so hard for. I'm a piano playing singer-songwriter, and as the pandemic hit, I, like so many other musicians, switched to live streaming. We also were looking for a community by presenting concerts on our front lawn for our neighbors, socially distanced, of course. And my collaborative partner, James Lundy, and I kept asking this question of how can we, especially in this time of social distance, how can we be exploring the world and creating connections and coming and kind of come closer together? So we started making phone calls and emails out to the farthest reaches of the world, called friends all over the world, and we found seven hosts, on a host on each of the continents, and we asked them to be a host for a one song concert. We asked them to film an environmental space that's really important to them, sacred to them, whether it was their back garden or a beautiful park, and send us that footage. And then together with that host, we have curated and discovered a song that was important to them, was important to the earth itself, was important to their community. And so through the magic of blue screen technology, I will be playing this song that we've chosen together to celebrate Mother Earth and the community within this environment that they're sending to us. So the film will be premiered and really workshopped on Saturday night, April 17th at 7 o'clock. And I also want to say, we know we're not going to get this project right. One song per continent, one location per continent. Of course, it's not going to be comprehensive, but we think what's important is to start having that conversation and engage with one another, learn more about each other, learn more about the earth and all of its beautiful magnificence and all of this incredible diversity on our planet. So Seven is an attempt to celebrate all of that and engage in conversation, and hopefully that conversation will continue to expand and expand.
It's very cool, all these different continents, environment, and that music, absolutely.
I am singing in languages I've never sung in before, which is a whole nother thrill as well. And just the journey itself, it's been a very, very intuitive process. And I'm just so thrilled to be learning more about this amazing world we live in and connect with more people who are so dramatically moved by Mother Earth herself.
Wow. You said earlier you're from LA. You just recently moved to the Kansas City area.
I grew up in Kansas City, so I like to say that Kansas City is my hometown, my heart town. And while I have lived in many other places for quite a while, it feels really good to be back.
Well, welcome back.
Thank
so seven, you. Seven songs at 7 p.m., basically. And I know Kansas International Film Festival and Cinema KC, they're also working to bring together some panelists, some musicians, maybe some of the filmmakers. So they'll be there live to talk to the audience, talk to the webinar people too.
What also we'd like to do is open up, we're gonna have a question and answer after our presentation, and we'd love for the community to be able to dialogue with us on what worked, what didn't work for them, what else they'd like to see. I think that kind of a conversation locally is just as important, if not more important, than an international one.
Absolutely. That sounds exciting, both the performance and then that opportunity to collaborate with the artist and help direct something down the road, something in the future, help it evolve.
It's definitely a work in process at the moment, but that's the exciting part.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. So 7 p.m. on Saturday the 17th. Mm-hmm. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us tonight. You can find details about each of these EF21 events on the Climate Council of Greater Kansas City's website. And that's www.climategkc.org. EF21 Online runs April 17th and 18th and is co-sponsored by KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. Details again at www.climategkc.org. Thank you for listening. This has been the Climate Hour. I'm your host, Bob Grove.